This is Metal Mike, and in this episode of the 80s Glam Metalcast, I talk to Mark Evans of Heaven's Edge. We discuss their stellar 1990 debut and what they've been up to in recent years. Check it out. Mark, welcome to the 80s Glam Metalcast. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing very well, sir. I really appreciate the phone call tonight. So, first question here. So, I like to call this BC. So, before Corona, you guys did the 2020 Monsters of Rock Cruise. How did that go for you guys?
It was amazing. It was absolutely amazing. And, we got it in just under the wire, too.
Really?
Yeah. Just before everything shut down. It's for us, getting to do any of what we get to do over the past, what's it been now, 7 years since we reunited, has just absolutely blown us away that we even, after all these years, get the opportunity to do this again. And with our age now, you know, the distance from back then to now, we can appreciate it so much more. Everything's kind of slowed down, and to just be a part of it, you know, see our name listed on a t-shirt with all, you know, with Extreme and, you know, Night Ranger and Kix and all those bands, is just, it blows us away. And the crowds have been amazing. We did the first show on the cruise on the first Sunday. We left Saturday. So that we left Saturday night. We did the first show of the cruise on Sunday in the main theater. And it was funny because the last time we did the cruise, we also did a show in the theater, but it was at the same exact time as the Super Bowl, which they were playing on the big screen. So we had a decent crowd, but, you know, a lot of people were watching the Super Bowl. This one here, we came out onto the stage, and it was just packed. And we've gained, kind of like in the old days, the goal was to gain fans. You need to get the exposure in there. And people from all over the world come to the... go to these cruises and do M3, go to M3 and stuff. And we've had people coming up and going, you know what, I got to be honest with you, I apologize, but I had never heard of you until I saw you the last time on the cruise or saw you at M3, because we're definitely one of the lesser known bands on any of these things. But the fact that people are just like, oh my God, I had to go out and get your records, I had to do this, I had to make sure I was here for this. And so gaining fans after all these years when you're, you know, you're closing in on 60 years old is pretty damn cool.
That's awesome. You know, and that happens with a lot of different bands. You know, if your friends weren't into that band, or they didn't play them on the radio station where you live, there might be a chance you might have missed out on that band. And that's what's great now with YouTube and Spotify. You can get caught up pretty quick.
Oh yeah, it's and you know, so people, and I've had people do that too. Be like, oh, I saw your, you know, the band's name, and you know, we were putting stuff together and, you know, doing a playlist, so we, you know, knew all the bands. And people going, oh my God, we listened to your stuff, it was the first time, or, oh, we had forgotten about you guys. And so it's just, it's amazing to go out there and get that kind of reaction, and especially when you hear it from, like I said, you're on the cruise, and there are people literally from all over the world, and coming up and just, you know, oh my, I've waited 30 years to see you guys. And I'm like, wow, if you had told me that 8 years ago before we got back together again, I never would have believed it. So we've gotten to do some pretty cool stuff over the past 7 years.
I watched a few clips of it. I was not there at the cruise, and I thought it sounded killer. Is there any talk of maybe doing another album, or once this thing blows over, doing some more shows?
Definitely doing more shows. We're keeping our fingers crossed that that M3 still happens, that they were able to move it to Labor Day weekend. So we're really hoping for that. And after that, you know, once they open things up, I'm hoping to book a show locally, you know, in Philly somewhere, hopefully in the fall, if not maybe into the winter, depending really on Jaron's schedule, because the new bass player is also on tour, or will be again on tour with Tantric, I'm sure, once this thing is over. So we kind of have to work around that schedule. But we will definitely be doing more. Reggie and I are writing. It's a much slower process than it used to be. We're, I guess, not as prolific as we were back in the day. but we are writing. We like the stuff we're writing, and hopefully we will be able to get together with the rest of the guys and actually, if not a full record, maybe an EP or something. But I'm hoping for, we do have new music. It's just a matter of getting the whole band to record it instead of us putting it out there with you know, drum machine that Reggie programmed, and him and I doing all the, you know, all the tracks on it. So we're hoping that that's going to happen. That's the plan, and we'll see if it happens, with, because who knows nowadays what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. Right now, the subject matter is tough, because I don't know if you've ever seen any of these videos that, like, David Coverdale does. He's singing songs about the vacuuming and the coronavirus blues, so we got to get past this stuff and get on to some more positive topics, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's crazy, and I'm tempted to do one of those, you know, Facebook live things. I'll just have to figure out exactly what to play, because I know some people are playing their own stuff, some people are doing covers, so... At some point, I may do something just out of extreme boredom.
So, in 2019, in the fall, you guys lost your original bassist, Gigi. He sounded like a real cool guy. I was very sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. That was tough. I mean, we, back in, I guess it was late 2018, we had gotten, because the band, we, you know, five guys in the band, we'd have like a group text and at different times reach out, whether it's something funny, whatever it is. And George had texted the band and he's like, any of you guys ever sneezed and thrown your back out? And I was like, sadly, yeah, I'm getting old. That's happened.
Right.
And from that point forward, he was just continued with pain in his back. And one thing led to another. And within about 3 months, they had told him, and he had told us that, you know, he had cancer that had spread from his lungs to his bones, into his intestines, and eventually into his brain. Oof. And they were doing some treatment, doing what they could, but I, at that point there, I think it was just, it was all, they already knew that it was so far along. He had probably been sick for a while and just didn't realize it. But losing him back, I'm trying to think of August 18th, I believe it was. Losing him was really, really tough, because it's not, it's one of those situations. We've been in a band together for years. We don't all hang out all the time like we used to, but we went through so many good times and so many bad times, unfortunately, together, that it just, you become, you know, just brothers. And so losing somebody that you felt that close with, and had so many, past the bad experiences, the stuff we went through back in the day when things started falling apart, the stuff we've done since then to share those things with him and with the rest of the guys, was amazing. And I'm so thrilled that we had that opportunity. But then when the realization of, like, wow, I'm never going to get on stage with him again, was really tough, you know, and seeing him go through what he went through was tough. But unfortunately, it's kind of a reality now. We're getting to that age, and
right,
you know, cancer's a bitch. I mean, it just, it doesn't care who you are, it doesn't care what you've done, you know, if it's going to come and get you, it's going to come and get you. And but beyond that, I mean, we talked after he passed as a band, and decided that we did not want his legacy and our legacy to just die with him, and decided, you know, for sure we definitely wanted to continue playing, because we knew we had M3 coming up. We knew we already had the cruise booked, and in hopes that George was going to be better by then. But we were like, you know what, we're getting older. Who knows how much longer these things are even going to happen.
Right.
We've got to, you know, enjoy every opportunity we get. So we were fortunate in the fact that that Jaron Galino, who was in a local band here, Mach 22, for a number of years, and then had joined Tantric and had been on the road with them forever, was available and, you know, and into it. Because, strangely, I'll try to make a long story short. I met Jaron probably about 9 years ago. By chance, I was selling a bass amp on Craigslist. And he had contacted me. I had no idea who he was. He came to my house, pulled in my driveway with the rest of the band. They were going to a gig. We were loading it into their van. And he gets out of the car. It's in the dark and everything. I got my hair slicked back in a ponytail. He goes, oh my God, you're Mark Evans. Like, how do you know? He's like probably 22 or 3 at the time.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh my God, I'm a huge fan. I'm like, really? And I've gotten a chance to know him over the years since then. And knew he was a great player, you know, great on stage, nice guy, super humble, just loves to perform and play. And so when we were thinking about people, I was like, what about this guy? And I sent Dave and Reggie a picture of him and a quick video of him with Tantric, because we didn't have time as a band to get together, because Dave's traveling all over the world typically for the record company. And they were like, you know what, Mark, he's the guy. See if he's available. So I contacted him. He's just like, well, what are the dates again? And I gave him the dates. He's like, believe it or not, I'm not booked those dates for the cruise or for M3. So he said, he's like, I'm in. And he came down and we rehearsed a couple of times with him. And he fit in perfectly. He was the perfect guy to come in. He had total respect for George's legacy. He didn't want to come, you know, try and outshine anybody or, oh, look, I'm better. He just wanted to get up there and perform. And he did a phenomenal job. He was an absolute pleasure. I look forward to playing with him again.
That's awesome. So when you look back on your debut, what are some of your thoughts?
I'm still very, very proud of it. Whenever we get together to, you know, to actually do these shows, I go back and start listening to it again just to make sure that I remember the words and that type of thing. And I'm still really proud of it. I think that Neil Kernan, who produced it and mixed it, did a great job. It doesn't sound like there are some records from back in that time that when you listen to them, they kind of have a dated sound to them.
Yep.
And ours still sounds fresh. It still sounds good. And I love getting to still get up and perform those songs. And it amazes me when we get up and play and, you know, play and Find Another Way or Come Play the Game or Hold On to Tonight or something. And people are singing it like at the top of their lungs, which, you know, I absolutely love.
Yeah, definitely. The sound, I mean, it's a great album, amazing album. The sound quality is
Thank
great.
You.
I really think the sound quality was really evolving, like 90, early 90s, you know, on the hard rock yeah. records. A lot of those albums, even though, like I said, especially the metal albums, like the glam metal that came out in 91, 92, they weren't the biggest albums, but man, the sound quality was superb. It was getting very good at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So, first single video is Skin to Skin. Awesome song. You think that was a good choice for the first single?
No.
We
wanted to Find Another Way to be the first single.
Yeah.
And the record company's plan was, because like you said, things in the business was changing even at that point, but their thing was, we're going to get on one of the heavier songs so we can get it onto, you know, the hard rock radio stations and try and build things that way. And then we're going to come back second single and put out Find Another Way. And they were like, and that'll be the icing on the cake. And our feeling was, well, why wouldn't you just do the icing on the cake thing first and make your best impression? So I didn't agree with that. And it did okay for us, but it was unfortunate because the Find Another Way video was halfway done when we ended up having issues with Columbia Records. We had filmed half of it here in Philly. We were actually doing a couple of week or 2 or 3 week tour up in through New England area and got the call that, you know, that Columbia was shutting us down. So, and we were supposed to leave right from New England to fly out to LA to the soundstage to do the rest of the video. And so unfortunately that never happened. And we've actually tried to get footage of what they had filmed for the initial part, but no luck on that. But we all thought that Find Another Way should be the first single, but unfortunately when you're dealing with the president of Columbia Records, he gets to override you when you haven't had any singles yet.
Right, right. Yeah, and I was going to say the same thing. Find Another Way, to me, that's got like radio hit written all over it. I'm very surprised that was not the first single, but what are you going to do, right?
Right. It's whatever it was that we did back then was enough for us to be able to do what we're doing now, which we're incredibly appreciative of. And And it's obvious to me when we play Find Another Way. People love Skin to Skin when we play that as well. But Find Another Way just seems to be, you know, the one that really grabbed everybody. And I know because it's the one that people sing the loudest, so they're paying attention to that one. But, like I said, I'm really proud of the first record. I was planning on being really proud of the second record as we were working on it. But the strange thing, if you listen through some other place, some other time, actually two of the songs on it, Rock Steady and Just Another Fire, were recorded for the first record, but didn't make the cut.
Oh, okay.
Which I also wasn't thrilled with. But the rest of the record after that, it went from, we got re-signed with Capitol Records after everything fell apart with Columbia to do the second record. And we went into the studio to do the initial demos for it, which was songs like Some Other Place, Some Other Time, Jackie, Can't Cry Anymore was one of them. We had done like four or five songs that are, really good quality. And we actually had Neil Kernan mix them, even though he didn't record them. But then after that, when we were offered to do this second record with MTM, they needed more songs, so we had other demos. So that's why it's kind of like the album goes from sound quality of, you know, really good, and then it starts sounding like demos towards the end.
Right.
And the funny thing is that some of the songs that we wrote in the last set of demos, we listen back now, and it was us desperately trying to be a little bit more grunge or a little bit more in tune with what was going on in the early 90s, and it wasn't us.
So what happened with Columbia Records? So what I think all of us hard rock fans were expecting is, you know, you get your first single that's a little bit more, you know, heavier, then you have your power ballad. You know, you kind of go through the trajectory of, at least three videos. So it sounds like you kind of stalled out on the second one. What happened? Was it they just didn't have faith in the project or times were changing? What happened?
No, it actually wasn't that. There's what happened, and the long and short of it came down to Donnie Einar, who's the president of Columbia Records, said, I forget if it was a cassette or a CD, you'd think it'd be burned in my brain by now. He said, this is a band I just signed called Alice in Chains. This is the future, and you guys are kind of like the past. Mm. And shut it down. That was the end of it. It wasn't, the record was doing well. Find Another Way had already been released as a single out west and was like number one. It was doing great, but they just decided, you know, nope. You know, the grunge, the new thing from Seattle is what the future is, and that was what they were going with.
Okay. And Alice in Chains was kind of like the earliest out, I believe. I was trying to do a research. That came out in August. When did Heaven's Edge come out?
We came out, I believe it was in May.
Okay, so that's not far apart.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the other thing that's funny, too, is we were, when we got signed initially, we had a showcase at the Trocadero in Philly. And as with most bands back then, you know, you're trying to get signed, you're going to have a record company showcase, and you thought, well, you got to come out and support us, we're having a record company showcase. And 9 times out of 10, nobody shows up. Well, we were told at the truck by our management that 7 different record labels were coming out. And right before the show, they came back and they were like, they're all here. We're like, oh, crap. So ended up in the following weeks after that show, we got offers from all of them.
Wow.
And the offer that we went with was a guy by the name of Tommy Mottola, who is the president of CBS Sony, not Columbia. He's president of the company that owns Columbia Records, but also owns Epic Records. And he told us, I think Donnie Einar just gotten hired. He said, I think he's going to be your guy. I think you're going to do much better here. And maybe a month or so later, we got a package from David Glue, who was the president of Epic Records, who really wanted to sign us as well. He was hoping that we were going to land with him. And he sent us a card. I still remember the card. I wish he still had it. It's one of those like black and white Hallmark cards. Everything's black and white, but then there's just like a red color or something. And it was gangsters like that. It's like Bonnie and Clyde or like Sonny and the Godfather that had just been shot up in an old fashioned car. And the red was the blood coming down. And inside, he was just like, this is what I felt like when you guys signed with Columbia. and he sent us a cassette or a CD or whatever. He goes, this was my Heaven's Edge consolation prize. And it was Firehouse.
Oh.
Who have obviously went on and did very, very well for them. They still sound great. I saw them on the cruise. CJ still sings his ass off. But it was just funny, like, this guy took the time to send this card to us.
So who did you guys tour with on that album?
The only actual tour that we joined on to for a short bit was with Dio.
Okay.
The rest of the time we were touring, playing clubs and small theaters. Going around. We would do some shows here and there. We did some shows with Danger Danger back then. But they weren't tours. It was just like a handful mm-hmm. of dates. But most of the time after that, we were just touring on our own, you know, playing wherever we got booked. And so we never got the full blown, like, I'm on tour with this one for, you know, the next 6 months or whatever it may be. We came close. I know we were offered, before everything fell apart, we were offered to go out with Damn Yankees.
Mm.
And then, like I said, everything fell apart. When Columbia stopped, the money dried up.
Sure.
And also Bad Company, I believe, if I remember correct. But it was Bad Company when they had that guy Brian singing, not Paul Rogers.
Right. Yeah, they toured. They toured together on that album. I remember seeing that
show.
Yep. That would have been awesome.
Yeah. But like I said, we get to do these things now. And, you know, some of the guys in all those bands, we've gotten to know them. And hang out with them on the, you know, with the cruisers and M3 and everything. So I said, I can't complain. Even Dave, our drummer, who I don't know if you know, but he's the vice president of A&R with Roadrunner Atlantic Records.
Oh, no kidding.
And yeah. So now he gets to be one of the guys that, you know, ruins musicians' lives. Sorry.
Carmel, right? Yeah.
But he had, back when we first started playing again, he had just finished the, that last Rat record, I think it was called Infestation.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
And he was also working with like Queensryche and Megadeth and some other bands that were, you know, in the second half of their career as well. And he wrote an email to everybody in the band after we had gotten the chance to do some of these shows. And he said, we've got to look at all this the right way. He said, we are the lucky ones, because he said, some of the bands that, not like a Bon Jovi or a Night Ranger or somebody like that, but some of the bands that were a little bit more successful than us, he said, these guys are still out there trying to make a living, driving around in a van, you know, at 50 some years old, you know, not making a ton of money and everything. But that's their life. They just continue going and doing. And he said, for us, we get to hop in for, you know, a week on the cruise or a weekend at M3. And feel like musicians again and feel like, you know, feel young and, you know, get to have that kind of fun. But he said after that, instead of hopping in a van and driving to, you know, Des Moines or, you know, some town, wherever, we get to come home. We have nice houses. We have jobs. We have families. So he said, you know, we're the lucky ones because we're not out there struggling trying to do it, but we still get the opportunity every once in a while to hop over to the other side and enjoy ourselves that way. So we can't complain.
No, man, no doubt. Being from Philly, do you know the guys from like Cinderella and Britney Fox? Did you know any of those guys?
Oh yeah, actually I went to high school with Dean Davidson.
Okay.
And the rest of the guys I'd gotten to know, you know, through just, you know, being around them. We had done a few shows with Britney Fox. We played with them out in California. And like I said, I had already known Dean. And my wife was actually Mike Shermick, or Michael Kelly Smith, sorry, his roommate back when Britney Fox had gotten together. And so we've got to know them through those things. And the guys in Cinderella, same thing, just from kind of, you know, being around. Actually, the original logo for Heaven's Edge, not the one that ended up on the album, the one that's tattooed on my arm, that you can't really tell what it is now, but the original logo was actually designed by Emily Kiefer, by Tom's ex-wife.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's awesome that you guys are still out there doing stuff, because I'm a big Brittany Fox fan, and Dean and Michael Kelly Smith, they're just like incognito. They don't do shows. They don't talk to anybody. So, you know, hey,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, I know. Well, when we played, I think it was 2015, maybe, we played at the TLA, and I had Brittany Fox come and do the show with us. And Johnny had even told me, said that, you know, he's like, he knew that Dean wasn't going to be involved.
Right.
But he actually reached out to Michael to see if he, you know, he's like, you know, he would just come up and just play a song or two. And Michael was just not into it.
Yeah. I mean, some people, it's just, they don't want to relive the past or any of that kind of stuff. And I guess you just got to respect it.
Yeah. And it's a shame, because they're missing out. It's an amazing feeling. It's an amazing high, even when you only get to do it a few times a year. It's like a, you know, it's like a drug. You just, you know, you live off of it until you get a chance to do the next one. Or, you know, you live off of it when you're, like this past week, going through, you know, the Facebook memories thing come up, and it's memories from M3 from a few years ago, and memories from the cruise. And I mean, just, I sit there and look at the pictures. And, you know, especially if I'm at work, I'm a union painter foreman in Philadelphia. So, you know, I'm wearing painter's whites and a bright orange shirt and construction boots and a, you know, hard hat. I'll be sitting at lunch and flipping through on Facebook and going, wow, what a difference. I'm sitting here now doing this, but look, every once in a while I get to do that.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
One thing that you guys used to implement and still do, I believe, is some choreography. Did you get that from Kiss? Were you guys Kiss fans?
I was a huge, Kiss was my first concert back in, I think, 1974, 1975. It was right before Kiss Alive came out. I saw them at the Civic Center in Philly. Literally changed my life, because, you know, now, like, everybody, you're prepared for anything. You want to go and see a band, or, you know, this band's opening up for so-and-so. Oh, let me watch some videos so I can see if I like them or not. And with Kiss, all I had was the Dress to Kill album cover. And it was the four guys in those, you know, gangster suits with makeup on. I had no clue what I was walking into when I walked into the Civic Center. They came out with those costumes on and all of the bombs going off and spitting blood and fire. And I walked out of there like shell-shocked. I was, I think, like 14. It's like, I know what I want to do.
No doubt. Oh, I love them too.
But actually, a lot of the choreography stuff that we did, a lot of that came from a local band, a legendary local band around here that unfortunately never got as big as they should have, called the Dead End Kids.
Okay.
And we were all huge fans. In fact, you might know Bill Mattson from the Dead End Kids. He was in the band Tangier.
Tangier.
You remember them?
Yep.
Yeah. And I started going to see them when I was, you know, probably late in high school, you know, sneaking into clubs. And they were that same kind of unbelievable, like, oh my God, what am I watching? But they did all the kicks, the guitar spins. They were the first ones I ever saw do any of that kind of stuff. And so we decided to incorporate it, just because, you know, like, it looks cool. And, you know, Cinderella had done a lot of the same. Brittany Fox had done a lot of the same. It was just kind of a thing we did. But it all stems from the Dead End Kids. They influenced us. They influenced Poison. I mean, Poison was from York, Pennsylvania initially. They were fans of the Dead End Kids. And, so that's where a lot of that came from. If you happen to look up, I know there are some old videos of Dead End Kids on YouTube, but if you look some of them up, you'll see what I'm talking about.
I'll have to check it out. It sounds right up my alley, Mark.
Yep.
So, as things started to fall apart and Heaven's Edge didn't have a deal anymore, did you try to form another band or do anything throughout the 90s, or what happened?
Well, what I did is when I left, because I was actually the first one to say, you know what, I can't do this anymore. It's not working. I've got two kids at home, and we just don't mesh with what's out there right now. We're forcing, trying to write like that. It just wasn't working. So I left, and I started, because I still needed to make money.
Right.
So I started a local cover band called Pack, and played with, we played for maybe, 2 years, 2 to 3 years, something like that. But just doing cover stuff. And then the rest of the guys, Steve wasn't part of that. Because he was already out of the band at that point. But Steve, George, and Dave got with another singer, a guy named Sean. I can't remember his last name, and formed a band called American Pie. And I think they were maybe together for a year or so. And, it didn't work out. They didn't end up, getting signed or anything. So they all kind of started, moving on to other things as well. But then once the Pack was done, I had done that for a while, but I was working during the day, and I was like, you know what, I'm just done. And I just kind of walked away from music for years and just spent the time raising the kids, or as my wife would say, so we're in a child coma. We had three kids to raise, and so, nothing else at that point mattered. It wasn't like, going out and drinking and partying and doing, it was all went by the wayside. It was, all about the kids at that point.
Totally understand. But it's nice that you were able to come back around. The interest was still there, and you're able to do the cruises. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny, we were not planning on getting together, and there's a guy by the name of Kieran Dargan. He's from Ireland, and he would put on a festival called Firefest in Nottingham, England every year. And it turns out he had been reaching out to Dave through the record company, and Dave was like, we're not even a band. Well, eventually, I guess it would have been in 2012, Kieran messaged me on Facebook, and I was like, same thing. I said, Kieran, we're not even a band. I mean, we haven't played in forever. And he was like, can I have your phone number? I just want to call you and talk to you. And I said, okay. So I get a call from this guy from Ireland. And he was telling me, he said, Mark, look, he said, he started naming all these bands. He said, I got all these different bands to reunite to come over here and play Firefest. He said, you have no idea how much people love your band over here. And, I talked to him for a while, and he said something funny to me. He said, Mark, look, let me put it to you this way. You're going to fly over to England for the weekend. You're going to feel like an absolute and total rock star for the weekend. People are going to be just, gushing over everything for the weekend. And then Monday, you're going to go back home and you're going to have to take out the trash just like any other day. it just struck me funny. And then fortunately for me, for my wife and I, when Firefest was announced, I got a message from a promoter in Athens, Greece. And he said, I can't bring the whole band down here, but while you're in England, hello, my dog's coming up to say hi. He said, while you're in England, he said, is there any way I can get you to, come down to Athens and do an acoustic show? And I was like, well, you just have to fly my wife and I down there and back to London again and, and pay me something and put me up while we're there. So we made a deal, and so we went to England on Friday, played on Saturday, and on Sunday got up, and the rest of the band flew home, and my wife, Jeannie, and I, we flew down to Athens, Greece, and decided to spend the rest of the week in Greece. So did a show on Tuesday night in Greece that was one of the best memories I'll ever have of my life, because I played for an hour and a half in front of the most passionate music fans I think I've ever seen. They literally, when I started playing, there were some technical difficulties before I played. We get in there, the place is packed. Get up on the stage, and once I finally was able to start playing, once they got the guitar situation fixed, I had a little tray next to me that had, some thing of tea on it, some water and everything. People started putting shots of Jack Daniels up there for me. And I started playing the first song, and they started stomping their feet and pounding the tables and singing so loud that the drinks just bounced right off the tray.
Wow, that's crazy.
It was crazy, and I played for, like I said, an hour and a half. I learned, because I don't play guitar on all the songs, just like on the acoustic one, so I learned everything that could possibly be played of a Heaven's Edge song, plus some other newer originals that I had, just by myself on an acoustic to these people that just were going nuts for an hour and a half. I finished the set with saying thank you, good night, and they started screaming for me to play Hold On To Tonight again.
Wow.
I'd already played it. And I kid you not, and, you know, not embarrassed about this, you know, at all, I started playing Hold On To Tonight again, and they started singing so loud that I just stopped singing. And I was up there sweating, so nobody could really tell, but I was sitting there listening to them sing to me, because I stopped singing, and just started crying.
Wow.
It was just this incredibly emotional, like, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I'm in freaking Greece. I was afraid that they weren't going to know anything. And here they are singing along every word of every song. It was just, it blew me away. I mean, after all these years, I make it to Greece, and who would have thought that there were that many people that even knew who the hell we were?
That's amazing.
And then staying the rest of the week in Greece was also awesome, because just Athens is amazing. We went down to the southern tip of Greece at this Cape Sunio and stayed at an amazing resort overlooking the Aegean Sea and the Temple of Poseidon. It was just like it was a completely surreal week. We got back just going, I can't even think straight right now. I can't believe, because we hadn't played in like 20 years. So I'm like, I was blown away, absolutely blown away.
I tell you, man, they're passionate over there. I wish we could get the states that passionate about hard rock and heavy metal.
Yeah, they are. It's so funny. Like, they, we got into Greece on Sunday. They picked us up at the airport and just drove us to our hotel. I had Monday with nothing going on, and they had asked me. They said, "Can we take, you know, you and your wife out to dinner, you know, to an authentic Greek restaurant in Athens?" I was like, "Absolutely, that'd be great." And these guys are, it's almost like the people that are into like the Comic-Con that mm-hmm. know every detail about every superhero, every character, every everything, you know, or like a Trekkie with Star Trek, or, you know, they know every detail of our lives. They, and they're also brutally honest. Like, if there's something that they don't like on your record, they'll tell you. "I thought this was great. I loved everything, but that one song, no, not so much." Or when you're performing, they're like, "Oh, that was, you were amazing. I mean, I did hear that one note that you cracked on," but like, there's no edit button, but they know every last detail. And actually, speaking of that band, The Pack that I started, it was a cover band. I mean, just a cover band playing in local clubs. We had t-shirts made up, which I had totally forgotten about. One of the guys was wearing a Pack t-shirt. He somehow researched down, found on eBay or God knows where, somebody selling a Pack t-shirt, actually knew that I was in a band called The Pack, and ordered and paid God knows what for a Pack t-shirt that I had even forgotten existed.
That's insane.
Yeah.
That's, I guess, the beauty or the scary part of the internet, right? I mean, you can find just about anything. You can get anything. It's like, it really opened up the world, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, let me ask you about something. This might be a little bit out of left field, but, well, okay, so I love Heaven's Edge. I love Britney Fox. Another one band that I love is Lillian Axe, okay? And
yep.
I feel like your voice would fit well with, like, the music that Stevie Blaze does. Are you familiar with Lillian Axe?
Some, but I'll be checking them out tonight.
Yeah, check out like, the first album, 1988, self-titled, 1989, Love and War, because your voice and their singer, Ron Taylor, little mm-hmm. similar quality, and something to think about down the road. You know how they do those projects on Frontiers? You know, you and Lillian Axe, maybe.
I will definitely check them out.
And one thing I got to throw in is I think we have a mutual friend, a guy who plays your stuff to this day on the radio, Jackie Bam Bam.
Love Jackie.
He's a character, isn't he? He's awesome.
Oh, my God. Guy, absolutely love the guy, though. He is, and it's so funny. He'll be 90 years old, and he's going to look like that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But, yeah, I've had him, any of the times that he's available, whenever we do a local show, I always have him come to you know, introduce us and bring the band on. And, but he's great. I mean, he even helps out. My wife and I do some different benefits and such. And he'll be like, hey, man, why don't you call in? You know, see what we can do to pump up the benefit. And, you know, he's a great guy, you know, real generous. And it's fun. I actually got a text from him at some point last night. Typically from him, a text from him is at like 3 a.m. and tell him, I heard you're going to be doing the show with my, he's like, I'm friends with him. I'm like, oh, okay, cool.
That's awesome. Well, I figured Philly, man, you guys had to know each other.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I knew him from back when we, at the Galaxy, the club in Somerdale, which is really where us, Britney Fox and Cinderella all started. We would play there. All of the bands, unless you had some other thing going on, you typically played at the Galaxy once a week. You were either, you know, for us, we were the Friday night headliner, the Friday night midnight band. Right before we started, they had just gotten signed and gone out on tour, but they were always, I believe, the Saturday night midnight band. And before them, Cinderella was the Saturday night band. But we played there, I think, every Friday night for at least maybe like a year and a half, 2 years before we got signed.
Nice. So, Mark, what would you like to say in closing to all your fans out there?
I would just like to thank them from the bottom of my heart for still supporting us, still remembering us, and also for the amazing love that they showed us and George's family when he passed away. And the fact that all of them were also very supportive when we came back out and decided to play, and after George had passed, everybody that came up there, they're like, oh, thank you so much. We're so worried that you weren't going to keep playing. We're so sorry about George, but you know, we love you guys. And so I just want to thank all the fans from the bottom of all of our hearts that they have made this second half of our, not really career, the second half of our music life as enjoyable and memorable as it's been.
Very good.
Yeah, really. Yeah, my wife just said almost better than the first, and yeah, it absolutely is.
You can actually enjoy it.
Yeah, we just get, it's like M3, because I'm also a fan of a lot of these bands, of a lot of the bands, this year when we're playing at M3, and hopefully it happens, I'm psyched because we're playing Friday night with Kix and Slaughter, and then I have the rest of the weekend to just hang out and watch all the bands and hang out with everybody, because people laugh at me, but every time we've done M3, you know, we get the artist passes. We can go wherever we want, and hang out backstage and watch the shows from up there, which everybody thinks like, oh my God, that's so cool. I'd be back there all the time. But my wife and I actually buy tickets, even though I'm playing there, because the rest of the weekend we want to have seats, because the passes don't give us the access to actually sit in a seat.
Mm-hmm.
So we buy seats and sit out there and watch, and people come up going, what are you doing out here? Watching the band, just like you. I like these guys too.
Well, that's awesome, Mark. Well, hey, man, I really appreciate the time tonight. It was a great conversation. You and the family, stay healthy and stay well.
You do the same, and thank you so much.
Mark's a cool dude. That was an awesome interview. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Rock on!